Monday night on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet, it's Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We are hot on the Shohei Ohtani trail. Don't worry, John Morosi will be joining us around 6:30. We're also hot because the studio must be 35 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, I'm not the table is like actually warm, which is a sign.
I don't know what the hot takes from Kipper and Bourne when they leave the studio in our 4 minute switch over, but it's hot, it's hot. John Paul Morosi will join us around 6:30. The little probability check, little pulse check. We got Juan Soto, we got Shohei Ohtani, lots of things that could happen. Let's see if they will. Jeff Merrick will join us in about 5 minutes. Merrick Monday, lots of Leafs tidbits in the latest 32 Thoughts podcast. NHL Board of Governors meeting starting today, so we'll get some look around what is going on with the big folks. Tonight, the NBA in-season tournament semifinals begin. Justin's favorite part of the NBA season so far has been this. So.
100%. Not even close.
Yeah, it's been an absolute blast. No Raptors, but nonetheless, lots to watch. But with winter meetings starting down in Nashville with MLB, man, it's Juan Soto discussion with the Blue Jays have really picked up. It's Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, maybe both, maybe neither. So we're in this discussion period of, are we okay with the alternative? Alternative being, if we don't get Shohei and Juan Soto's on the table, are we happy? Are we disappointed?
When framed like that, a little ridiculous, right?
Right.
Because like Juan Soto is the exact thing that the Toronto Blue Jays in 2023 needed. Lefty power bat, one of the best bats in the league, a guy who would have solved pretty much every issue offensively, mm-hmm. or at least solved the primary issue offensively. And yet when you look at this team and what 2024 may bring, I'm not sure Juan Soto is the catch-all solution like Shohei is, which Shohei is not pitching next year. So they're both kind of bringing not equal value, but close to. But the difference is what you have to pay when comparing those two assets. Shohei Ohtani is just dollars out and hopefully dollars in because
dollars
you're making so much money.
Hey, we'll give you sponsorship. We'll give you all this other stuff that isn't dollar in your pocket.
An asset that would pay for itself.
Exactly.
But Juan Soto is completely different in that we don't know what the price would be. Mm-hmm. And the Blue Jays are pulling from a very, very weak farm system. One of the worst in Major League Baseball. And I just don't even know if they can win the sweepstakes, let alone imagine what it'll leave you with afterwards. Like the flexibility will be completely null. So is that the all-in move? Is that the team that turns the Blue Jays into a World Series contender? Maybe, because we had this conversation all summer long. You need a Soto type. But I just feel like if they expend all the assets to get him, I'm not sure it's going to work as seamlessly as a Shohei Ohtani would.
When you're hearing what the price has been for other suitors in the Juan Soto stakes, considering that it was four or five prospects plus two starting pitchers when it was the New York Yankees, we're hearing very, very expensive, and understandably, but it is a one-year rental. There's no guarantee that Juan Soto would want to be a Blue Jay. He's a Scott Boras client, so you can guarantee that he's going to be looking for big money maybe after this season. So
it's a one-year rental.
It's
an all-in move on 1 year.
And all-in, and without having this big cachet or of farm system or prospects, you're getting rid of some pretty big names like Tiedemann, who we kind of put on the do not touch, would have to be in there. Alek Manoah, who's someone that's going to be very difficult to evaluate. I'm sure the Blue Jays have a different perspective of what he's worth than the rest of the MLB general managers and their staff. We can talk to John Morosi about that later, like how difficult that process would be if Alek Manoah was potentially someone to be traded. So a lot to consider. Obviously, having Juan Soto in your lineup would look pretty good. Just what does that leave you with? A one-year window, you have to kind of work in that window. If you get Shohei Ohtani and Juan Soto, different story here.
No,
you just swing for the fences and hope for all the best, right? And that would be a pretty desirable team to play for. But it is seemingly, John Morosi did tweet this the other day, that very unlikely the Blue Jays get both, which crushed our dreams a little bit, because wouldn't that look pretty?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine, although I do think Shohei is this completely different situation. Again, we talked about it, you know, it buys you this level of relevancy globally that I think will pay for what the actual acquisition cost is. And there would be some lineup things that they would have to figure out. But the reality of only doing Soto is that you're still losing Chapman and you're still losing Witt. And you're still losing a bunch, Brandon Belt, a couple other position players, or a few position players that you have to replace. And Soto fixes the glaring hole offensively, but won't fill every hole on the diamond. So you still have work to do without the prospect capital to pull from.
One thing I am doing is my part by wearing a Blue Jays-related item every day until Shohei signs. So maybe he'd be watching on Sportsnet across the country.
You better hope this doesn't drag into holiday season.
I got enough.
Okay.
So I'm doing my part. A 92 World Series vintage sweater, Shohei. We got great vintage merch up here. We could get you outfitted in whatever you want. So I'm doing my part.
Okay.
Doing my part. All right, let's shift to a little bit of hockey before we go back to more of the Blue Jays discussion with John Morosi at 6:30. It is Merrick Monday. It is Jeff Merrick from the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. How's it going, Jeff?
I'd rather hear Morosi Monday. I want to hear about Ohtani. Did you know, by the way, my first real job as a quasi-teenager was selling hot dogs at Exhibition Stadium for Jays games?
Wow. It's true. What were the prices like back then?
I knew you would ask. I think a Jumbo Coke was $1.25 or maybe $1.35. Don't faint, everybody. And I think the hot dog is like $1.75 or something like that.
Well,
it's cheaper today, you know, at least on Tuesdays.
Loony dogs nowadays.
Loony dogs. You guys are A-list. You're legendary with those things. it was, and I'll be honest with you, I only took the job so I could watch Jays games. And I was there for the Bruce Keeson, Ernie Witt situation and the George Bell deal. Oh, yeah, it was. And that was the first year where the Jays were, like, legit good, too. So I can't remember if I even made any money every time walking home. I just took the job so I could watch ball games for free.
I love that.
So the Blue Jays are talking Shohei and Soto and or Soto. The Leafs were talking Zadorov, have to move on, but maybe talking Tanev. Take us through what happened with the Leafs before Zadorov went to Vancouver. There was a conversation around both at once. There still could be conversations about Tanev. How did the Maple Leafs lose out on Zadorov and Tanev in the moment?
So this is coming off of Elliott's report on Saturday that the Maple Leafs had conversations with the Calgary Flames, so Brad Treliving and Craig Conroy, about acquiring not one but both. Two of the three defensemen whose contracts were expiring at the end of the year, Noah Hanifin would be the other one. More on him at a later discussion. I think there's a lot of interest around the league involving him. But the one thing that we've known all along is that Brad Treliving has wanted to do something with his blue line, wants his blue line to be a little nastier, wants the blue line to leave a bruise every now and then. And it's no secret that he likes and covets two defensemen that he used to have in Calgary, most notably Nikita Zadorov and also Chris Tanev. Now, the problem is, even before you get to, you know, what the compensation would be that would have to go back from the Maple Leafs to the Calgary Flames, the Maple Leafs would need the Calgary Flames to retain salary. And that's where the discussions about, okay, how much are they going to retain and how much does that drive up the price of what the Maple Leafs have to pay? Like, if it's, to make things easy, if it's 50% on both, then Brad Treliving would essentially be asking the Calgary Flames to retain somewhere in the neighborhood of $3 million. And that would have driven up the price, obviously, for how much Brad Treliving would have had to spend to get them. So that's where it seems the discussions fell apart, and they decided to go with Nikita Zadorov. No salary retention at all for the Calgary Flames. The Vancouver Canucks had moved out Anthony Beauvillier to the Chicago Blackhawks. That opened up the requisite cap space, and that's how they ended up getting Nikita Zadorov. So Brad Treliving still sticking with his guns, I think still very much interested in Chris Tanev. He's a Toronto guy, went to RIT. I think the story locally in Toronto is pretty well told between him and his brother, late bloomers, etc. The question is, does he want to come home? And, you know, what price is Brad Treliving willing to pay to bring Chris Tanev home? He's, as we've seen, he's a shot block machine, defense first guy. The premium is on defending. And if you have a look around, you know, the last few teams that have won the Stanley Cup, one of the things that they really have in common is they're able to defend. Whether it's, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, we talk so much about that big, you know, mobile defense that they have that are great in their own zone. Like, with all due respect to Adin Hill, I mean, he didn't have to be great last year in the playoffs because that blue line was outstanding. Tampa with a really good defending blue line. The Colorado Avalanche, ditto. The St. Louis Blues with their, you know, oak trees on the back end. Like, when you start to add it all up, one of the common denominators as we look year to year, how teams are successful, it's with large blue lines that know how to defend. You need guys to join the rush always, but a premium is really now being placed on defensemen who can defend. And I think that's something that Brad Treliving has always coveted. We believe he's looking for at least one right shot defenseman who's strong in his own zone. You know, Tanev fits that bill. We'll see where this one goes. But I don't think for a second that Brad Treliving has lost interest in Tanev at all, even though the double deal, the Zadorov and Tanev, has obviously fallen apart.
Yeah, that would have been something. I wonder, I don't know how much strategy went into it, but the trade request came while Zadorov was playing in Toronto. I don't know if he was pining to be a Maple Leaf, but it put pressure on the Flames and the Maple Leafs just weren't ready. So I feel like in a weird way, that trade request, whether it was because he wanted to be a Leaf or not, kind of cost the Leafs from even being, you know, in those, they were in the discussions, but cost them from reaching the finish line.
There are no coincidences. There are no coincidences in life. I think you nailed that one. I think that's a pretty obvious one. And also too, like Dan Milstein, the agent, you know, knows where you can maximize exposure. With all due respect, if you say that before a Calgary Columbus game, a nationwide arena on a Tuesday night, is one thing. If you say it, if you say it in Toronto, really on any night, you're gonna get headlines from coast to coast. I'll be honest with you. Like I kind of thought that it was a bad move to begin with, and I thought that it was really going to cost Zadorov. That even if Craig Conroy had a deal that he wanted, like I'm surprised that it happened so quickly, because the feeling around the NHL, I'll tell you, the feeling around the NHL was Craig Conroy needs to establish now that he's not just going to give players what they want when they want out of Calgary, because then every agent will say, well, look how easy it was for Zadorov. We'll just do the same thing. And this was Craig Conroy's sort of first test with a very public proclamation of the player wanting to get out, wanting to leave, wanting to go elsewhere. There was a feeling that Craig Conroy was going to wait this one out in order to establish that he wasn't going to be bullied by an agent, wasn't going to be pushed into a corner. Like, I'll be honest with you, I thought this thing might wait till trade deadline just for Craig Conroy to prove a point. But I suppose he got what he wanted, didn't have to retain, got the return that he wanted. And I think that considering Calgary had played well and has been playing well and are starting to talk about a playoff spot, I don't think he wanted that in the dressing room anymore. So as much as it may sort of short-term damage the reputation of, well, he just acquiesced to the agent, I think he looked at this and said, look, we're winning. Let's make sure we have a positive room in there.
Chatting with Jeff Merrick on Merrick Monday. Okay, we'll start. We'll keep with the defenseman chat. Sean Walker, former York Simcoe Express, my guy. You knew that was coming. Keswick, Ontario.
Oh, I love you, man. You're predictable. I knew. It's so funny too, because I come on Mondays, and I was mentioning this with Elliot on the podcast on Sunday. In the back of my mind, I'm like, I wonder if Ailish is going to mention the York Simcoe Express.
You know,
and I caught myself, and I'm like, stupid head. Of course she's going to mention the York Simcoe.
Well, then you're ready with the answer then.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that he's that kind of the kind of player that Toronto covets at this point. Like first of all, he's having a great season in Philadelphia, and they love him in Philadelphia. John Tortorella, every time you hear Tortorella talking about Sean Walker, it's glowing. So it wouldn't surprise me if long-term he stays a member of the Philadelphia Flyers. It seems to be a really good fit here, but the caveat is he's on an expiring contract. And depending on where the Flyers are at, I mean, he could get traded at deadline and then re-sign with the Flyers in the offseason. I think people see that as a potential situation if the Philadelphia Flyers decide that they want to make a move with the former product of the York Simcoe Express. But he's someone that's getting some attention from around the NHL. I don't want to say that he was buried in Los Angeles, but now that he's playing in the Eastern Conference, so here goes the guy in Toronto talking about the Eastern Conference again, I think that there are more eyeballs on him and people are now more aware of just how good a defenseman Sean Walker is.
I believe a siren goes off anytime Friedman or Merrick mentions someone from the Keswick Sutton area. So that's why Ailish doesn't miss it.
Where's Chris Cherney from? He played YIT.
Yeah, that's my Keswick boy. Keswick boy.
Robert, former teammate,
Robert
isn't it?
Thomas. Right. Robert Thomas. Where's he born? Okay, very good. You got all your YIT
two Southern
covered.
Well, and we will still claim them if they're within the
if they go on to great things, you claim them.
If you can get there on the 404, you can make it happen.
Okay. So, Seattle and Montreal on the network tonight, Monday Night Hockey, Merrick. Worst goal differential in the league, in the Eastern Conference, excuse me, right now for the Montreal Canadiens. Not progressing to the extent that we'd expect. I know it's a tough division. I know we were picking Detroit and Buffalo and Ottawa to be ahead of Montreal at this point, but it feels like it's, I don't know, is it getting a little stale? Is it not progressing at the rate it needs to? What's your read on the Canadiens right now?
I think we're learning all. I think Montreal Canadiens fans are learning all about rebuilds and how rebuilds aren't linear. Like, look, ask the Buffalo Sabres what that is like. Like, I'm not sure if you had a look at the crowd last night in that Buffalo-Nashville game. And this is with the bad Buffalo Bills on a Sunday night. And they announced it at 14,000. But between you and me, if there were 14,000 people at KeyBank yesterday, my aunt is my uncle. There's no chance that there were 14,000 there. And I think the Buffalo Sabres are now learning what the Buffalo Sabres fans are, once again, I should say, learning what rebuilds are. I think Montreal Canadiens fans are getting there. And that's, rebuilds aren't a straight line. Like, we've talked about bunny hops before, and that's what rebuilds are. It's a couple of steps forwards and three steps backwards, and then two steps backwards, and then lurch four steps forwards. And there are times where it's going to look great and times where it's going to look ugly, because in a lot of ways you're starting with scratch, starting from scratch. You know, reading Arpan Basu's piece in The Athletic this morning about the 5-on-3 and the troubles that the Montreal Canadiens have had on the 5-on-3. And I think one of the lessons in it is it's still a young team that wants to rush everything instead of taking their time. So far this season, the Montreal Canadiens have spent 3 minutes on the 5-on-3. And they have zero goals and only one shot to show for it. That is indicative of a team that is trying to rush everything and not reading the situation and not taking their time. They only have four attempted shots, by the way, in that mix there. So I don't think that it's anywhere close to the panic time that it is in Buffalo for Montreal. But like, listen, I do wonder what you're sort of winking at here. And I think that is, at what point do Montreal Canadiens fans start to get frustrated with a rebuild, right? Like, we'll wonder about that with Chicago. We're wondering about that with Philadelphia, even though they're playing well. You wonder about that with any rebuilding team. Fans will sit through it as long as you're honest with them for the first season. No problem. That's a free pass. Second season, okay, I guess. And then usually by the time the third season rolls around, fans generally have had enough of it. Mm. And I'll be honest with you, that's why I really wonder if the way that the Los Angeles Kings went about it might be the smartest way to do it. And you can make the argument that Detroit is doing it the same way. And that is, you announce the rebuild, you draft a number of young players, but then you start to complement them more with veterans. Like, I think it took Kopitar and Doughty about, what do you figure, guys, 1 year to go to Rob Blake, the general manager, and say, okay, enough of the rebuild, let's get some players in here. And then it was like Philippe Deneau, and then this past summer it's Pierre-Luc Dubois, and all of a sudden it's more veteran players coming in. And now, like, I'm not sure how many Los Angeles Kings games you guys have watched, but they are super legit. Mm-hmm. And speaking of your Simcoe Express, Quinton Byfield looks incredible. Byfield is fantastic. There's the YSE siren. Turn it on. Playing on the line with Adrian Kempe and Anze Kopitar, that might be the best line in hockey right now. Like, then, and Byfield isn't as hunched over as he used to be. He's more upright, working with Barb Underhill. The skating is great. Like, he's confident. Got that heavy shot. Big, big guy. So I do wonder if, you know, at a certain point, Montreal Canadiens fans start to get that, okay, we put up with this for a season, maybe a season and a half, but now we'd like to start to see some results. Because let's face it, in this universe of instant gratification now and social media, people expect things to change quickly. That's been the lesson of technology. You can solve your problems fast. Well, rebuilds take a long time. And I don't know that, given how fast our speed of life is, people have as much patience as they used to for rebuilds.
Seattle, Montreal on the network at 7:30 p.m. Little Monday Night Hockey tonight. Over in Seattle, Board of Governors meetings are underway. Okay, here's a couple things they could be talking about. Mandatory neck guards, maybe the IIHF announcing today that they will be instating those. Maybe an in-season tournament like the NBA that's doing quite well right now. Maybe those OT changes, but I'm not sure if they watch Boston and Toronto's. I don't think anybody wants any OT changes after that. What's on the docket over in Seattle?
So interesting with the, because I mean, everyone's now talking about in-season tournaments. Mm-hmm. So it's funny. I had this conversation about almost exactly a month ago with someone in the NHL. Remember, I just got to work. I was just at the our Sportsnet building at OMP, and I made a phone call to someone in the NHL and threw the idea out about in-season tournaments for the league. And this person said, "You know who talks about in-season tournaments?" And I said, "Who?" He said, "You guys. That's it. We don't have conversations about in-season. Like, how long do you want this season to go? How long do you want?" I was like, he said, like, "Look, we get crushed every year because we have our playoffs going into June. And now you want to add a tournament? Like, we don't want to play games early. Like, a lot of U.S.-based teams don't want to have a heavy October, November schedule because they don't want to compete against football, either NFL or college or high school even." I remember Doug McLean telling me they never used to book games on Friday nights because they didn't want to compete against high school football, which in Canada sounds kind of bizarre, but Doug's like, "Look, that's just the reality of it." The Dallas Stars know that all too well as well, and the Florida teams ditto. He said, "Nobody talks about this other than you guys." He said, "We've had like zero conversations about a tournament." I think what they are talking about, though, is this, for lack of a better term, and I don't think they'll call it the World Cup. I think they'll talk about that. I think they'll talk about whether the NHL will participate in the next Olympic Winter Games and what that would look like and how you would put that together. Like, listen, I always think there's a conversation about the Arizona Coyotes and their future. I think there'll be an update on the health of the league financially. I think there'll be discussions about other markets that may have interest as either expansion markets or relocation markets. I think there'll be a lot of chatter about Salt Lake City and Ryan Smith. You know, we had, you know, him on the podcast last year, and he talked about, you know, openly talked about wanting an NHL team. And listen, I have a hard time believing that Ryan Smith would have come on with me and Elliot without the blessing of the NHL to go on and shoot his mouth off about how he wants an NHL team. He owns NBA Utah as well, as you guys know. So I think all these things get discussed. The neck guard thing that you brought up, I think that's more of a negotiation between the NHL and the Players Association. And as many of us look at it and say, well, what's the harm in putting them on? Players always push back, whether it's helmets, whether it's visors. I think we'll probably go the same route with neck guards. I think that'll be something that ends up grandfathered in. Players are available and allowed to put them on as long as they're NHL approved, and they're rushing to get a whole bunch of approvals done on various pieces of technology here. But I think that's probably going to be a grandfathered item, kind of like the buckets and kind of like the windshields.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them make an appearance so far. I know they're having some, manufacturing backlogs as well. Now everybody needs to make neck guards. So that kind of makes a little bit of sense to me. It might take a little bit of time to get into the NHL. Well, we appreciate your time as always. Great way to start our week. Merrick Mondays, first guest of the week. We'll definitely be looking forward to seeing what else trickles out this week, and we'll have you on in 7 days.
So are we going to park like a little segment of this and call it YSE Corner?
I love English, that.
Is that what we're going for here now?
Especially when we got one of them PWHL kicking off soon. We'll get the Keswick representation with Aaron. It'll just
let me ask you two guys this, because the PWHL doing the Utica preseason camp, and one of the things that they're doing is 2-minute majors and no icing during penalty kills. Like the 2-minute major, let's just hear all your listeners and viewers know, the 2-minute major concept is essentially what the NHL used to have until the Montreal Canadiens in the 1950s showed up and started destroying teams when teams had to serve the full 2-minute penalty. Montreal, with like Elmer Locke and Rocket Richard, would fill the net, score 3 or 4 goals, and the game would be over. The PWHL is looking to return to the mandatory 2 minutes. Doesn't matter how many goals you score, and also not allowed to ice the puck on a penalty kill. I like both these things. What do you guys think?
I think it's the perfect time to be testing it out. Preseason Utica hockey, where everyone's getting everything under their belts, you know, trying things out. I showed Justin it earlier, and we were going to discuss it. So good way to segue it into us. Thanks, Mary.
I'm just here to leave little Easter eggs for later on. Okay, I'm just
perfect
seeding the show.
There yes, you go. Thanks. You're like a secondary producer. We appreciate it. All right, Jeff, enjoy the week, and we'll talk to you next Monday. That was Jeff Merrick, Merrick Mondays. We have about 20 seconds to do a Bet Rivers pick. Are you ready to go? Time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. Oh, and I picked the longest one ever. JJJ. It's the Triple J Parlay. It is brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's one of their little boosts. Jason Tatum, 25-plus points scored. Ja'Marr Chase, 5-plus receptions. And Joe Mixon to score a touchdown, plus 420. I'm going JJJ all the way. Justin.
You know my obsession with the in-season tournament. And it touches on one of your J's, Jason Tatum. Of course, I like the Celtics to absolutely smoke the Indiana Pacers tonight. This is an alt line, plus 163. I think you could go up a little bit, maybe just like ladder it up, see how much the Celtics can beat the Indiana Pacers by. I just think it's a mismatch. Defensive rating through the roof for Boston. I know Pacers score a lot. You need defense to beat the Pacers, and the Celtics have that in spades. So at alt line, plus 163 tonight.
All right. That is perfect. That was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. On the other side of the break, a little baseball, and we have some quotes from Ross Atkins talking in. Not sure where he was. That's all part of the fun. That's next on the Fan Pregame.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back on the Fan Pregame, SportsCenter, SportsNet 590, The Fan. Everybody's waiting to hear from our next guest, JP Morosi. But before we bring him in, a couple interesting tidbits from our beat reporters down in Nashville, where Ross Atkins was scheduled to meet the media in person. And last minute was not in person. He is somewhere, we don't know where, but he declined to say where he is and said that he is very grateful to Zoom for making sure that the meeting could happen. So not saying that he's in Nashville, not saying that he's in LA possibly. He could be in Toronto. Where in the world is Ross Atkins?
Not in Nashville, apparently. Like, he wouldn't say that he wasn't in Nashville, but...
Because he would just meet with them.
Yes, he would just meet with them.
It's very
strange. There's been a lot of intrigue around this. We were talking about it while we were preparing for the show.
I'm on not team. He's in LA, for sure.
Well, yeah. I hope. But, like, not for cameras, right? Mm-hmm. Only for Zoom, only for the beat reporters that would be in Nashville. It's, like, only... A couple people are privy to what Ross Atkins is going to say today, although it will all be reported, of course, but not in Nashville for the winter meetings. That's generally not what a general manager of a baseball team in the major leagues would be doing right now. So he was up to something for sure. He's doing something else. Not sure what it is. Doesn't want to tell
us. He's cooking.
But with all the rumor around Shohei Ohtani, with all the rumor around Juan Soto, clearly this is going to only further the speculation about what's happening with negotiations ahead of winter meetings right now. So it's the saga continues here.
I had a video game when I was younger. I think it was a video game. It was like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Do you remember that?
It was a TV show, wasn't
it?
And a board game?
I think it
was everything. Multimedia back then.
It was a show. And that's what I thought of exactly when we saw. Where is Ross Atkins? Okay. We know where our next guest is, Nashville. And it is John Paul Morosi joining us from OB Network. You have been busy. I've seen you all over the television screen today, John. So we appreciate you finding some room for us. I assume you don't see Ross Atkins anywhere near you. Because if so, you could tell us.
No, good evening, Ailish and Justin. I do believe that Ross is somewhere here in Nashville. I don't...
What?
I have not been able to locate him in person directly, but I do believe he is somewhere here in beautiful Middle Tennessee.
Okay, so what could he be up to? Why wouldn't you be in person? I don't need you to you know, you can just...
Maybe he's got the sniffles.
Speculate,
and you wanna,
but,
you know.
Well, maybe, yeah. Maybe he's not feeling well. It's very strange to us, John.
Yeah, I agree, and it's an interesting question. He may, you know, is it possibly connected to Shohei? Perhaps. I want to remain guarded about my optimism in terms of the Jays being the team that ultimately wins his services, because I still think that the Dodgers are the front runners, and I also believe that the Braves have a strong case to be made as well, but the Jays, I think, are appealing to him for a variety of reasons. I think the city of Toronto playing in Canada are things that appeal to Shohei Ohtani. And as a result, they're still in there. The Jays are very much still in this. And I do think that we'll hear more this week, but before the week is done, what Shohei's decision is. Because, honestly, it's less now about what the money looks like and more about simply where he wants to play. The comparison I would make is to when LeBron James made his decision and basically he could just pick where he wanted to play and the contract followed. It's not quite to the same extent with Shohei because it's just the numbers are so massive and there are so many different moving parts here. But I really believe that the offers are going to be all in the same area. And while on some level, of course, this is about the money, there's also a big element that's not about the money. And it's about where he wants to make his home, the best personal slash professional situation. And on that score, I've got to say, Toronto has endured in this competition much longer than I expected they would. And the longer they stay in it, there's still a chance.
That's our city. That's our city. I feel like a sense of pride.
We need you in the presentation for Shohei.
I could sell this beautiful country of ours to Shohei in a minute. Okay, so it is Monday, December 4th at 6:35 p.m. Which teams do you really consider to be in the running? Because now you start seeing the Braves all of a sudden. I'm like, did I miss the Braves conversation earlier? Are they a new addition to this list? This list seems to be moving and changing every day.
Well, Ailish, I do think that the Braves, at least they've been overlooked a little in some of the reporting on how valid they are as a possible landing spot. And the reason is they have got arguably the best homegrown core of players locked up for the long term of any team in baseball. They're still relatively young. Yes, they have some pitching they still have to address, but this is a team that is set up to win for a long, long time. And as a result, they're intrinsically the kind of ball club that Shohei wants to play for. It would almost be as if the Jays had Vladdy and Bo both signed for the next 7 years. And that's the kind of team that Atlanta already has. So I think it would be a leap of faith for Shohei to join the Jays about what that team's going to look like around about 2026 and 2027 and beyond. Because we expect Shohei's contract to be so much to the long term that it's basically a lifetime contract, and he's going to want to know the team he's going to is going to be good for that duration of time. So I think Atlanta was overlooked, but they've always been there. The Giants have made it a priority to either get Shohei or Yamamoto. I am of the mind at this moment in time that the Giants have a much better chance of landing Yoshinobu Yamamoto than they do of landing Shohei Ohtani. I don't expect the Seattle Mariners to really be a player for Shohei, but I do think that they're in the mix for Yamamoto. Many things, as you can tell, speaking about these different teams, there's a lot of contingencies here. Shohei, I believe, is and will be the first domino. It looks as though Yamamoto's process is going to ramp up in the next week to 10 days to where he'll arrive in North America later this week and meet with teams in person. I think so much of everything that's happening underneath the roof here of the Opryland Hotel in Nashville has to do with Shohei. And as we speak today on a Monday evening, the Jays, I believe, still have a lot to say and still have a vote here in the overall process of Shohei Ohtani.
So Shohei is domino one. Domino two is clearly Juan Soto. And Juan Soto, of course, has been linked to the Toronto Blue Jays as well. This one, though, despite the magnitude of Ohtani, this one almost feels more far-fetched to me because, well, you got to pay to get Juan Soto. And last I checked, the Blue Jays, have one of the most barren prospect systems going. If you got to pay a high price that's not just money in terms of futures capital, can the Blue Jays really contend in the Juan Soto sweepstakes?
They can if the Padres fall in love and believe that they can do something with Alek Manoah. And Manoah becomes part of that conversation. To me, Manoah has value if you have a club like San Diego, which definitely has to trim some payroll. And if you go back, I'll just make this point about Manoah. If we were to have this conversation a year ago, and if we were to say, okay, if you were to envision a situation where you were going to trade Manoah for 1 year of Juan Soto, and it was coming off of the year that Alec had in 2022, and we were going to trade multiple years of Manoah for a single year of Soto, the reaction would have been, no way did the Jays do that for 1 year of a player. No way. It would have been no way that would have been a vast overpay by Toronto. And so if you look at Manoah now and find a way to combine him with a Davis Schneider, potentially, depending on how the Padres feel about Tiedemann, there is enough there if the Padres are believers in Manoah. And I tend to think that Manoah in San Diego, better place to pitch, better division to pitch, and he fits what they're trying to do from a payroll standpoint. I think that the Soto possibility, and I said this for the last couple of days, I look at Soto as being more realistic, as much as I still believe that, that Shohei is a possibility. I think Soto is the more realistic possibility, because it just becomes a matter of players at this point in time. It's, there's no trade clause. There's no asking Juan Soto what he wants to do. It's simply, can you make the deal? And if the Jays are comfortable playing in the Shohei sweepstakes and putting that amount of money forward for him, well, then we know it exists somewhere. And it's going to probably be less money. It'll be less money for 1 year of Soto on even a per-year basis than it would be on a per-year basis for Ohtani, if you kind of catch my drift there. Where there's enough money there. If you're going to make a massive offer for Shohei, then you should be able to take on Soto's deal for 1 year and give yourself the best possible chance to win while you still have control of Vladdy and Bo. And by the way, I do not believe for a second, and I know some people have asked this question, I don't believe for a second that they would get Soto and then move Vlad or Bo to kind of replenish the prospect base. I don't think that's at all something you're trying to do. The idea here is we got to get as good as we can, try to get over this hump in the playoffs as clearly as we can while we still have this group of young players. And now it's not so young anymore. Now it's becoming more of a mid-career player where the urgency is very much upon us right now, given how the club has performed and what they still have to do here with Vlad and Bo still in the fold.
If the Padres love Manoah, boy, does it solve some problems for the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, Manoah is a problem at this point, 100%. I don't know if it's going to work between these two parties. It feels like it's not going to. Plus, you get the bat that you were craving and needing all year long last year. However, I do worry, because if it's Manoah plus, it leaves the Blue Jays with almost nothing in terms of their futures. And it says, we're all in and this is it. Is that sort of the reality here, where it's like last stand for this group? Not saying Ross Atkins or Mark Shapiro will be out of a job if it doesn't work, but it just feels like with the uncertainty with Bo and Vlad, 1 year maybe for Soto, nothing in the prospect system. Like, it feels like, hey, we're all in and we'll see what happens here.
That's a very fair characterization. And I think that's probably why they've been so open-minded to spending money, because I think if you give a realistic assessment, if you compare, like we've talked a lot in recent days about the Cubs system, the Cubs have an excellent system. And they, I think, will be able to make a trade for an impact player. I don't think Soto, but they have so much more in terms of depth to make a move. The Dodgers have so much more depth to make a significant trade if they want to. And so at this point, ownership may be calculating that they actually have more in the way of money than they do in prospects. They're trying to allocate their resources towards that direction. I think it's an excellent way of framing things. And I think it does probably speak to the urgency here. The fan base clearly is wanting to see some results. And I think the top baseball officials, Shapiro and Atkins, realize that if they're going to be able to keep these jobs, the ballpark looks great, and that's been a big success off the field. But they now need to find a way to have some on-field success in the playoffs. I think they probably realize that if they don't get to the playoffs and have some success in the next couple of years, it's probably inevitable that you're going to see a change in leadership for the organization.
We're chatting with John Morosi from Nashville for the winter meetings. Okay, so Shohei and Juan Soto are very nice, clickbaity names that we're all excited about, but what do the Jays do if they don't get either? Is there a pivot? Do you know what's next on the list if they aren't unable to satisfy our exciting, exciting needs with those two superstars?
Right. Well, I do think they're fortunate in that the bats that they would need, and you look around this club, and they have to make, I think, multiple offensive additions. And so if it's not Ohtani or if it's not Soto, then I think they look at, And it's, as much as Jays fans may not love to hear this, you're probably looking for some of those similar shorter-term contracts to what you saw them try to do with the likes of Brandon Belt. But the good news is, I think you've got, if you get the right guys, a better collection of options for you. I think Rhys Hoskins is going to be a tremendous fit for somebody. And I look at the Jays and the Cubs as and the Mariners potentially as well as strong possibilities for him. You've got J.D. Martinez, who controls the strike zone very well. Justin Turner. There's also the possibility, we heard this today, about the Cardinals still being open-minded to moving one of their younger bats, one of their outfield bats. And I think that's a way for the Jays to potentially get a little bit more athletic, maybe a little bit more left-handed. I look at that as an option. So Max Kepler's name I would keep an eye on as well. He's a trade candidate from Minnesota, but he's a left-handed bat who controls the strike zone very well. So the good news is, even if Soto doesn't work out, there's enough options there for them to potentially look at other free agent or trade avenues at this still early stage of the offseason. One benefit of a slow-moving market, my friends, is there are still plenty of possibilities out there.
Do you see a scenario, John, where George Springer doesn't start this upcoming season with the Toronto Blue Jays?
That is a great question. It would be a challenge for me to see it. Just based on the health track record in recent, at least the last year or so, the production where it is. But I would never rule out the possibility of pairing him up with maybe another contract that hasn't necessarily worked out as well elsewhere. If it happens, to me, it's going to be a much later in the offseason piece, where after the dust settles a bit of the markets, then maybe we come back after the new year and we see how the depth charts line up. And if there are options there for the Jays to move his contract and address a different need, you could see it, but they may have to pair him up with a player that they don't want to move, a younger player who's controllable to incentivize the team to take on the salary. We saw that happen last night with the Jared Kelnick trade. But as we saw there, it's hard to make that deal and really make it look good based on the needs right now that exist.
Chatting with John Morosi of MLB Network. I want to ask you a little bit about the legacy of a guy that just got inducted to the Hall of Fame. I know you know him well, Jim Leyland. And I wonder, secondary to that, because we won't have so much time to ask, but about Cito Gaston as well, because I know Blue Jays fans are wondering a little bit about his, I guess, not getting his own moment as well. So both of those all wrapped up in one, because I don't want to keep you too long, John.
Sure. I think for Jim Leyland, first of all, I had the pleasure of covering him in Detroit. Hall of Famer. We could fill up an hour and a half of podcast time of me telling stories about just fun moments, funny moments, times that he made me laugh. Just really iconic Leyland stories, but most of them revolve around his sincerity and how much he loves the game. And so to see him up there on the dais today, speaking at the press conference, the emotion on his face, he was holding back tears numerous times. He was joking that when the phone call came, he picked it up and that the phone call was actually coming from Jake from State Farm. I mean, he's just who says that, right? When you get into the Hall of Fame, so that's just his personality and the way that he just has his amazing sense of humor, and it's why so many people in the game are so thrilled for Jim Leyland, and a very deserving player, who of course a manager who of course became as a Double A player. I love this. Back in 1963, he signed with the Detroit Tigers as a young player out of Perrysburg, Ohio, and so that was 1963. So 60 years later, here he is. It's just a remarkable story that he's now in the Hall of Fame. But for Cito Gaston, I think Cito belongs. And I've long been an advocate for him. He won back-to-back World Series. And if you look at all the time since 1990 to now, only two managers have won consecutive World Series, Cito Gaston and Joe Torre. That's it. And all the history that he made as one of the leading African-American managers in baseball, of course, the first African-American manager to win a World Series. This is special history. And I think it's important that when you talk about the history of the game, the modern history of the game, what he means to baseball in Canada, in the U.S., played with Henry Aaron. He was a significant player in his day. I just think that he has a Hall of Fame resume. And honestly, the fact that he fell short and that Davey Johnson fell short and Lou Piniella fell short just conveys to you and to all of us how tough it is to earn your way to Cooperstown.
We can't let you go, John, without asking about Patrick Kane.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
What do you think?
That?
Is that a perfect fit? What does it do for this roster? Is DeBrincat, is that devotion that he showed before even stepping foot into that arena paid off already? Is this, the perfect marriage, perfect acquisition midseason for the Red Wings?
I think it's great. I think we're getting ever closer to what the three of us have been talking about for a while, which is, one of the Leafs in the wing is going to play in a playoff series again. Who knows? Maybe this spring, right? I was texting my dad about something unrelated in the spring. I said, hey, are we going to go watch, you know, now that Italy is qualified for Euros, are we going to go over there and watch a game? And he said, son, I'm expecting the Wings to be playing deep into the spring. It's like I haven't been thinking about this for a long time. And so as a family now, we're starting to make our spring plans, as we often did, about how long are the Wings going to be playing. And so it's fun to see. I think the Wings overall, the power play is really clicking. I think Alex Tanguay has done a great job coaching the power play units. And it gives you, obviously, a significant weapon to use now with Kane, and DeBrincat's happy and certainly liked the way they played on Saturday. So I'm a believer. They got a great coach in Derek Lalonde. Alex Lyon's been a fun story for a while. So I'm all in. As soon as Shohei signs, I can properly turn my attention back to 88 playing for the Wings.
Yeah, if the Panthers or Bruins would just, you know, chill and not be as good as they've been, maybe we get that Red Wings Maple Leaf series. Maybe we'll get it anyway, but it doesn't feel
like
it's going to be this year. Yeah,
you're right.
It is still early. And still early at winter meetings, still early maybe in the Ohtani sweepstakes. Probably, hopefully not that early, because we got to get this to a conclusion sooner than later, and you'll be on the ground for it. John, we appreciate you jumping on this afternoon.
Really appreciate the conversation. Thanks for everything, and look forward to the next one. All the best.
Thanks, Sean.
That's John Morosi, MLB Network in Nashville. We believe he thinks Ross Atkins could be.
So he saw Ross Atkins sighting, I think.
No, but if he saw Ross, this also, he could have seen Ross yesterday.
Yeah,
Ross gets
like
on
Ross
a bird,
goes
to
planes.
LA to talk to show. Like, a lot of things are possible here. If Ross Atkins is in Nashville, why would he not say he's in Nashville?
I went to Nashville this summer for the NHL draft and awards. And you can get lost in Nashville.
You can get the flu in Nashville?
You
is that what you're saying?
You can get the flu in
somehow
Nashville.
I don't think that's an issue for Ross.
It's a good city, though. That's a great place to hold this event.
Yeah.
But they're all too, like...
I agree.
They're too in the mud right now with Shohei Ohtani that they're probably not even, like, looking around realizing that they're at Tootsie's. You know, they're just so focused.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little less...
It's a little less
amenable
party.
To the party aspect of Nashville, at least early on here.
Once Shohei signs, they can enjoy themselves.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
But right now it is serious business, as John laid out there.
Okay, so I was trying to like mock up a little Blue Jays lineup with Soto because we were talking about Soto earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not convinced, like it's just not complete. And I get that makes sense because Matt Chapman's likely leaving and the Blue Jays are going to have some other regulars like Whit Merrifield leaving, and et cetera, et cetera. But the first four would be a combination, assuming Springer doesn't leave. Springer, Bichette, Soto, Guerrero. I guess Soto probably hits second, whatever. Then 5-9, Kirk/Jansen. You got to bring in a DH type like Brandon Belt. I suppose it could be right or left-handed. Then we're going Davis Schneider, Dalton Varsho, Kevin Beach. Like, we're not at the point where this looks like the Braves or the Phillies or the Rangers yet, even with Soto, right? So if Soto comes in and Manoa Plus goes out, still going to have to be some spending going on to get this to a World Series caliber team. Like, I get that Soto fixes a lot. It's just he doesn't fix everything.
What if that Brandon Belt type DH was Joey Votto? Can you imagine if we came?
It's almost too Belt-like for me.
But can you imagine if this next season you've got Ohtani, you've got Juan Soto, you've got Joey Votto? We would have so much fun covering this team. They would go to a World Series, not just because of Joey Votto. I mean, like, obviously Shohei and Juan Soto. But imagine the names, like the cast that you could have on this team.
And that's the thing. They have the pitching that
is ready. What do you say,
Reese
Hoskins?
Sure. I mean, I'd rather have Shohei Ohtani.
I felt tough asking that question, like the fall from grace question. Okay, John, so yes, let's say Shohei and Soto aren't available. But he did such a good job of making it positive still, because the real truth of the matter is there are options out there. This isn't like scouring a market where there's nobody. There are some serviceable, useful players out there. But when you look at the gap to Shohei and Juan Soto, it feels like, what's the point?
Well, last winter, mm-hmm. the Blue Jays came in second, we believe, with something. And then ended up trading the best prospect that they had, the prospect that could have probably turned into Juan Soto, to the Diamondbacks for a guy who didn't work out. So you can't make that mistake again. And I worry if you come second again, you might make another mistake.
I saw that Shohei Ohtani started following somebody on the Giants.
Don't bring that up.
I know. We're just going to not look at Shohei's following list on Instagram. All right, that's it for us. Hopefully tomorrow we have more Shohei news for you. The Fan pregame with Ailish and Justin. We'll see you tomorrow.